This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Hey, just a quick note, this podcast contains some forward-looking views. However, there's no guarantee that any forecast or estimates will be realised. On with the show.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to the U.S. Lens. I'm Ron Insana, Senior Advisor to Schroders North America. In case you haven't noticed, growth and value have done equally well so far this year, although each has had periods of outperformance and underperformance since exactly a year ago. The key question going forward is, will they continue to move in tandem, or will they diverge at some point in the future as new economic realities set in going into 2022? Joining me now to talk about that is Bob Kaner. He is head of U.S. small and mid-cap equities for Schroders. Bob, good to have you. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Ron.
All right, let's just talk about small and large growth and value. It's been interesting that from November of last year through about May of this year, value outperformed dramatically. Then we had a flip-flop, and now they're both up about equal for the year. To what do you attribute that?
Ron, I really think that that's really a function of where we are in the economic cycle. We've gotten greater certainty of economic growth, and as that happens, growth broadens out. And you see the real value parts of the market, which are really made up of basic materials, industrials, financial, energy. As we've had greater clarity on economic growth, those have been much larger participants in the market rally over the past year or so.
So you mentioned banks and oils, and without necessarily talking about, you know, how portfolios are constructed, I mean, they've outperformed pretty noticeably of late, while small and larger are about equal. As we move through the cycle that is now, you know, to an extent being threatened by higher interest rates in the United States and maybe a downshifting in growth, depending on one's outlook, how do you think these all fare going forward?
Well, I think we're definitely in that data-dependent part of the market. The market has certainly discounted the recovery, which is what markets do. But as we look forward, I think it's really critical that we see a continuation of that top-line growth and, frankly, easing of cost pressures. And so I think that's really going to be the key driver. When you look at banks are a little bit different. I'd say the banks have really been led by lower quality banks that have been the beneficiary of reducing reserves. As we go forward, I think you're really going to see a bit of a paradigm shift towards more higher quality banks that don't have any history of really negative losses around credit cycles.
Right. You mentioned higher input costs, and you know, inflation has become the watchword of late, both domestically and abroad. When it comes to small companies, mid-sized companies, and value-oriented companies, are they more susceptible than growth companies to these higher input costs that we've seen over the last many months?
They are. They also have the opportunity to price through that inflation if they have the correct industry structure, which I think is the critical component, given where we are in the cycle. I mean, inflation, it's everywhere. We speak to hundreds of companies every quarter, and it is the number one issue in front of these corporates is how are they going to be able to take price to offset the inflationary cost pressures that they've been absorbing over the last really all year. And I'd say that, you know, when you think about inflationary pressure, raw materials pressure, supply chain, that will ease over time. There'll be a supply response and those pressures will start to ease. But in reality, the labor pressure is prevalent everywhere. And labor inflation is really never transitory.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because this is maybe the most anomalous period with respect to labor that any of us have seen, where we have the quit rate, particularly in manufacturing and even other areas, leisure and hospitality, at the highest we've ever seen. The gap between the number of jobs available and the number of workers available is among the widest we've ever seen. And we also have more than half of the nation's employees thinking about quitting their jobs. So how are particularly small and mid-sized companies dealing with this? It's not as easy for them, let's say, to go out necessarily and buy a robot like it would be for an Amazon or somebody like that.
It is probably the biggest challenge faced by domestic companies across the board. I think it's been, frankly, a governor on the capacity growth. I think lots of small and mid-cap companies would like to be growing into this cycle faster, but they are constrained by the availability of labor. They're all paying more. They're all working to put programs in place to do better recruiting and training and retention. And that's key for a lot of these companies, is being able to retain their existing employees. Because even if you can find new employees, there's a learning curve and there's a ramp in order to get to full productivity. I'd say on the margin, we've recently started to hear from some of our more service-oriented companies that they are seeing some people come back into the labor force. But again, there's a learning curve. There's a productivity curve until those employees can really be fully producing, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, this question is a little off topic, but we've had really restrictive immigration policies over the last several years. Are any of these companies demanding that we just bring in more people, because we had 3.4 million early retirees? We still have over a million women who are not back in the workplace, and we have a baby bust going on. Not that that's an immediate solution, but we're short people, period.
Absolutely. And I'd say the one area that you see that the most is really in construction and housing. We're in the midst of a really strong housing cycle. Again, the biggest governor on that is not the raw material inflation that those companies are seeing, because the demand is so strong that they will be able to pass that through. It's labor. They don't have the people to hammer the nails. And so that's the industry that I would say is seeing the greatest kind of demand for greater, more employees entering the workforce. And I would just add that when you think about further kind of demand for employees coming from infrastructure bill, that's just going to create greater pressure on the short supply of labor that we have.
So if labor shortages and higher input costs aren't enough, American companies in particular right now may be facing tax hikes, given the composition of the Build Back Better bill, which has yet to pass, but still includes a wide variety of tax increases, some of which are targeted at larger companies. But are smaller companies going to get hit as well?
I think this is actually very different than the change in the tax regime that we saw in 2017, where smaller companies, more domestically oriented, benefited disproportionately. From what we can tell, the minimum corporate tax, that's really targeting big tech. And then the minimum tax on foreign earnings are also really targeting larger multinationals. So I think there's actually a bit of misperception in the market. We expect small cap companies, more domestically oriented, to fare better than most believe in this changing tax regime that we're in right now.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
So does that set up a valuation advantage for small and mid-cap relative to large-cap, if indeed larger companies are at some juncture going to have to pay more in taxes, presumably?
Yeah. I think it's both valuation and growth. I mean, the small cap part of the market, the Russell 2000, for instance, is trading at about a 8 to 10% discount to the S&P 500. And if you look at 2021 earnings growth, they're very similar. They're both experiencing very strong kind of off-cycle bottom earnings growth. But if you look out into 22 and 23, the small cap market is set up for much better earnings growth than what you're gonna see in the large cap market. Our first look at 22 is that the small cap stocks are going to be growing earnings kind of between 15 and 17%. And we expect the S&P earnings growth to be around 10 to 12%. So you've got a better earnings outlook, you have a discounted valuation, and you have lower risk around a potentially changing tax regime. So we think that that's a very good backdrop for the small cap space.
So what about the dispersion of returns? How do you quantify that?
It's been improving. I think time will tell. Hopefully, as we get further into the cycle with perhaps less monetary policy influence, we'll see greater dispersion. We go through periods of the market, specifically during earnings periods, earnings reporting periods, where you see greater dispersion. And then you go through maybe a little bit of a lull in company specific news, and some of the factors kind of take over, driving the market direction on Fed policy. Stocks tend to move more as a group. So I wouldn't say dispersion has gotten better, but we've certainly gone through earnings periods that have shown that the market can reward winners and penalize losers and really kind of see greater separation of performance.
You mentioned the Fed, and in addition to some of the uncertainties as to who may lead it, and that may not make a difference as far as the markets are concerned. But with respect to the Fed prospectively raising interest rates in 2022, and there are some estimates that they could go as early as July when they finish their tapering of their bond buying program. There's some people suggesting it won't happen until late in the year. How much of an influence, particularly on small and mid-cap stocks, are interest rate hikes relative to the rest of the market?
So given where valuations are and the discounted valuations we're seeing in the small cap space, I think we're going to be better positioned in the short term as rates rise. Obviously, the longer duration, more expensive assets will feel that repricing or valuation collapse, I'll say, more quickly. So I think early on, the small cap space is better. But if inflationary pressures continue and rates need to continue to rise, frankly, I think that's bad for all risk assets. But in the near term, as we look out in 2022 and potentially 2023, the rising rates, I think, is going to be a good backdrop for the small cap stocks, especially when you think about the construct of the index, so to speak. When you look at the S&P, you have a large part of that market that is kind of tech, telecom, media, internet, much higher multiples, I would say generally longer duration assets that are going to be penalized in a rising rate environment.
So the final question is just going to be at this, the relative volatility of the large versus small question. When we thought we were coming out of the pandemic or when things were starting to shift last November, we saw the greatest outperformance of the Russell 2000 relative to the S&P 500 in recent memory. That flipped, and now they're about equal. Do you expect that there's going to be a lot more relative volatility between large and small once again as we move towards 2022?
Rod, I would say that I always expect the smaller cap stocks to be higher volatility than the large cap space. There's just less liquidity. Frankly, there's less efficient information flow, which is an advantage for active managers, but it does create higher volatility. So I suspect the small caps part of the market to be higher volatility, but I think you get rewarded through that with better returns. And I think we're coming from a very good place to begin that journey with lower valuations and superior growth versus the large cap part of the market.
All right, Bob, thanks very much. Bob Kaner is head of U.S. small and mid-cap equities at Schroders. I'm Ron Insano. It was great talking to you today.
Well, that was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to find out more, check out our website, schroders.com/theinvestor download. You can also get in contact with us about anything in the show or ideas for future shows at schroderspodcast@schroders.com. Please remember to subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a review. We're now doing one show a week, which will be available every Thursday from 5 p.m. UK time. Thanks very much for listening, but above all, keep safe and go well. Cheers.